the blowing bubbles, pretty bubbles in the air.
Hey, it's Beth here, episode 531. I'm doing a new sound, finished with AI. I can only do one thing at a time, and I can hardly do that. So, anyway, that's what I've got. The other thing is, I am steeped in perfume in right now because my dog is 12 years old, Ruckus is 12, and every now and then he has this horrible smell, and we thought it was skunks, and we don't know what it is, and I don't know what's happening to him, and 12 is very old for a big dog, so that's what's, you know, been on my mind. I just want him to live to be 25 years old. I think I want him to outlive me. So anyway, that's what's on my mind. But I am ready, and that's why I can't do the AI with all the different things that I was supposed to do in one day. I've got this big thing in my head. I'm drowning in perfume, and I can just do one thing at a time. So here it is. It's Newshound. And there is a very sad thing that has happened. Two little girls. Believe me, when I was a teenager, when I was 13, I was doing just barely fine. Just barely. I got my period. I hated it. It happened the day I was having my first pool party in my life. And my mother gave me a Modest pad. I wanted to jump in the water with stones and boulders in my pockets. But I got through it. But what I could not get through was Twiggy. When Twiggy showed up, all the girls, we went crazy. We went on fad diets. We all wanted to be emaciated. And I just feel so sorry for these young girls who are on the internet. And now, you're not going to believe this, they have this store called Brandy Melville. It's taking over the country. It's a clothing store that only sells to thin girls. There is no size 4 is obese in their opinion. All the girls want to shop there. All the girls want everything from there. And the worst part is the prices are low. Oh. So any girl who is thin can buy the Brandy Melville look. It's just so sad. I mean, what do you do when you're just a normal size kid? Or right before you go into puberty, you gain a little weight. That's because the sex hormones and all that has to travel through fat. Your body's telling you what to do. Your body's telling you what to do while Brandy Melville is telling you what not to do. Ugh, I just despair. I feel so sorry for everybody. Okay, but we'll move on to Cary Grant, who always looked great, and I guess he was thin, although he looked perfect to me. He said that as he aged, all he did was think about the event and dress accordingly. He never overdressed. He never underdressed. He just thought about where he was going, what the hostess would appreciate him wearing, and or in the movie, what the character he was playing against, what Ingrid Bergman would want him to wear, what she would enjoy looking at. And he would know his actresses, so he would know that they liked his blue eyes in blue or whatever color eyes he has. He dressed for his audience. And I feel like maybe that's not a bad idea. I was just trying to stay clean. But maybe I could think a little harder about it and try to be Cary Grant. I mean, I have very few female hormones left. I feel like I could manage this. And he really did look great when he was older. And he said that when you dress for the occasion and you hit the mark, you're confident. So I'm going to start dressing like Cary Grant, I think. I'm going to see what happens. All right, Deion Sanders, who I don't even know him really well. as a football player or whatever. I know he was coaching his sons, and it turned into a big thing, and they didn't have a winning season. That doesn't matter. To me, what I love about him is he was in the book section of the Sunday Times. His favorite book was The Little Engine That Could. Now I love him. That's my favorite book. Every time someone read that book to me when I was little, I had no idea if the little engine was going to get over the hill or not. That's how little kids think. And he said that the book was so great because in his little world, there were some fancy trains, like, pimped out trains, amazing trains that just passed on doing the job. Couldn't have cared less about kids. Couldn't have cared less about anything. And this little engine, which he wanted to be the little engine that could. So now we know something about Deion Sanders we did not know. He must be a nice guy. Okay, there's a screenwriter, and she's got a tragic tale, and I did know her. She was the one who wrote Romancing the Stone way back when. Her name is Diane Thomas. She made $1 million. I mean, when I started screenwriting, that's where she was. She made me feel like I could do it because she was a waitress. Somebody got a script, somebody famous. They read the script, and it got passed around a little bit. And it finally got to, Michael Douglas. He sent it out to Jack Nicholson, Burt Reynolds, and Clint Eastwood, and they all passed on the role because the girl, Kathleen Turner, had a larger part. They were secondary to a girl, and they wouldn't do it. That's why Humphrey Bogart wasn't in... God, maybe I'm not doing very well today. Wasn't in the massive movie with Scarlett O'Hara and Gone with the Wind. He wouldn't play against Scarlett O'Hara because it was her story. Some of these guys cannot let the woman be the driving force in a movie. So Humphrey Bogart passed on it, and Clark Gable said, who cares? It's a great script. So I didn't think it happened in our day, but Burt Reynolds, Clint Eastwood, and Jack Nicholson passed on one of the best roles a guy could ever be in. And the interesting thing is that Michael Douglas and this woman became the best of friends. Nobody thought the script was going to make any money. There was no publicity for it before it came out because Michael Douglas wasn't a big star. He was Streets of San Francisco with Carl Malden. So, but everybody passed on it. So it was like, uh-oh, script comes out, movie comes out, huge hit, made $100 million, and it cost $10 million. Back in the day, that was unbelievable. And so what happened next is he gave Diane Thomas any choice of any car she wanted, and he took her car shopping. Michael Douglas wanted to thank her for the movie. So instead of getting a BMW or something smart, she got herself a Porsche, like the hottest Porsche. Michael was thrilled. He gave it to her. She was so excited. She took it out a few nights later. She was on the Pacific Highway, Coast Highway. She gave her boyfriend the keys. He drove it. She was in the back seat. And Norman, that's the guy's name, survived with only minor injuries, and she died. He wasn't even legally drunk. He just got drunk with power, and the roads were a little slick. Michael Douglas never recovered. It's to this day, he says it's one of the saddest. Her death is still one of the biggest losses of my life. I think about her all the time. Can you believe that? But anyway, that is one of the reasons I started screenwriting, because she was such a huge success with a girl story, a really fun rom-com. And Kathleen Turner was just coming off Body Heat, and nobody would even give her a chance at the role because she was steamy hot in Body Heat. And Joan Wilder, the character, has to be all mousy. So she broke in to the office in this mousy outfit. They didn't even recognize her in the beginning. And that's how she got the role. it was not, even Michael wasn't going to give it to her. She wanted it so badly that she had to break into the office and be there before they showed up. And the guy asked his secretary, and it wasn't Michael Douglas, it was one of the producers who really hated her because she was so hot. And he said, "Get this woman out of my office." And Kathleen Turner looked at him with that voice. No, she hid the voice. That's right. She hid her voice in the beginning. And the guy's screaming, "Call the police." And then she starts her little heavy sex kitten voice. And he goes, "Oh my God, you got the role." Because she had to turn from Joan Wilder into that hot, you know, tamale that was dancing with Michael Douglas in that white peasant dress, you know, in the square. And she did it. So anyway, but poor Diane Thomas, I think it's awful. So there's this sad story about this Alison Hulker, and she was on television, Dancing with the Stars, and she has this amazing husband, and he was also on Ellen DeGeneres. And I'd seen this guy around, happiest guy in the world, beautiful dancer. Together they were magic. They got married. He adopted her child from another relationship. They had two more children, as happy as they could be. And he kills himself. He died at 40 years old, with the whole world in front of him. And she's become the spokeswoman for people who go through that. To this day, nobody knows why. He left a note, but it didn't really explain it. So she has to live the rest of her life without him. And you can tell in the pictures that they were madly in love. I'm thrilled for people who have to go through that, because it's got to be the hardest thing in the world. Just the hardest thing, to not know why. I would imagine it was because I yelled at him the night before, or I, even something smaller than that, like I forgot to pick up his dry cleaning, or your mind would just go constantly to, what did I do wrong? And when you look at this woman, when other people would look at this woman, they would realize it doesn't always happen like that. Sometimes people do it for internal reasons that have nothing to do with his amazingly beautiful wife and his amazingly beautiful family. So when she's out there speaking about it, then I'm really happy for her. I'm really happy she's doing it. Okay, now, Cynthia Nixon. Okay, she's going to be in this play, and she's wearing an apron. She wears an apron all the time. She can get away with it. I understand. She has an attraction to blue cheese. She puts it on everything. That made me feel a little bit distanced from her. That is not my thing. But she does have this Emily Dickinson poem, and it's called "I Heard a Fly Buzz When I Died." She wants it at her funeral. It's not that great a poem. Okay? And I wish she would have explained why. All she says is that she wants this poem at her funeral. I've read it a dozen times. Cynthia, I have no idea why you're doing this. It's going to leave everybody wondering what is going on. Who cares if a fly, and actually, I don't want a fly buzzing by when I'm dying. I know what flies are looking for. I don't need this. I know what they like. I know what they do. I know where they lay their baby eggs. I think it's insulting, and I don't know why Emily Dickinson wrote it, and I don't know why Cynthia Nixon wants that poem. I would pick something a lot more romantic and a lot more beautiful. But everybody, you know, she's wearing aprons, and I can't do that either. So let's Cynthia. All right, now, there's this great woman named Kate Banks, and she was an author, and she wrote these adorable books for children. I have never heard of her. She's got one called Papa's Way, and she wistfully recounts this deepening relationship that this girl has with her father. And she had the best life. She lived in Rome with her Italian-born husband named Pierluigi Mazzamo. He was an engineer. They had two children named Peter and Max, which is so cute, Peter Max. When she was in her 30s, they moved to the Côte d'Azur in France. I'm reading this, I'm like, oh my God, this woman has everything. They renovated this gorgeous hillside house called Bois Joli, pretty wood. She was into it. This girl is from Brooklyn. The colors, the smells, the views. I'm reading this. I'm like, oh my God, she had it made. But then you read on and you find out that her whole life, she was haunted by the fact that her father was murdered in New Orleans. And I'm like, oh my God. You know, I was reading it going, wow. Kate, you nailed it. You nailed it. But no, it's just everybody has something that they have to get over. And I just thought, wow. You know, it's just, nobody has it made. Nobody. Everybody's got something that they're trying to get over. She's so beautiful, everything going her way, and she just couldn't get over her father's death. She wrote about it, she tried, she even met the guy that killed her father. He was a 16-year-old named Isaac Napper, and he was convicted and put in prison. And she wrote to him and she forgave him. And she wrote a book about it called Fighting Time. And it didn't even help. Like, she talks about grief and she says, it's overwhelming and you just have to get stronger than it. But nothing. She tried everything to make it go away, to make it stop hurting. And she just couldn't do it. She wrote poems about it. So this is one poem she wrote about. That's from her book. About Isaac and the fighting time. What he did to me, that guy pulled out his pocket knife, a Saturday night special, and then destroyed every aspect of my life. I began to see God everywhere, in my neighbor's smoking chimney, the crackle of melting frost, the twist of a climbing vine, the leap of a cat. I saw God in every person who passed. And that's what that guy did for me at the end. He taught me how to be grateful. So what she got as her amazing gift after 40 years of grieving over her father is that she could look into people's eyes and she could see, when she saw kindness and she saw beauty, she was overwhelmed, which is what I'm trying to do with my grief. I'm trying to appreciate loveliness and kindness. And I don't think I'm going to be excited about a cat leaping. But I could probably do my neighbor's smoking chimney. I could do that one. The crackle of melting frost. I could do that one. And a climbing vine. I'm not going to stick around long enough to see a climb. So 2 out of 4, I'm going to try 4. And if I see some kindness in people's eyes, I don't care that people aren't smiling anymore. I'm smiling again. It kind of shocks people. Not children. Children smile right back. Older people, they're kind of looking like, what's wrong with this lady? But if they give me a chance and they look in my eyes, they're smiling back at me. And that's what I'm trying to do. That's what I'm going to try and do in 2024. I'm going to try to get people to smile at me because I'm smiling at them. I think it's a little tiny thing. And I think I can do it. So in my little tiny burg, maybe I'll get like 30 or 40 this year. It's not that easy. And I'm just going to keep, maybe next year I'll get 80 people to smile back. It makes a difference. I let everyone in. When I'm on the road and people want to get into my lane, I let everybody in. 2, 3, 4, I don't care. And I smile and I make them smile at me and make them say thank you. It's a thing. It's like a little movement, tiny, minuscule. But every chance I have to be nice, I'm going to be nice to strangers. Except on awful days when I'm in a terrible mood and I'll try not to go out because I think I will bring some nastiness to the atmosphere. If I can stay home and just take it out on Kit and Ruckus, I will do that for the world. But if I'm in a good mood and the weather is beautiful, and it's not very, very beautiful in Texas very often. It's not 72 degrees very often. On a day like that, with my top down, I'm just happy and I'm spreading it. So that's what I've got from Kate. If she could learn how to do it, and it took her 40 years, I can learn how to do it. So that's, oh, this is crazy. A farewell to Dawn with no face. Wow. So there's this crazy Prince Philip at the University of Cambridge, and it really is ugly. It looks like a teenager did it. His face is covered in white cloth. It's the drapery of the gown isn't even good, and everybody wants to get rid of it. And so they can safely, okay, so they have gotten rid of it. They've gotten rid of the sculpture. This is not the first time it's happened, okay? The first time it happened was a bust of the soccer star Cristiano Ronaldo that was unveiled in 2017 at the airport in Portugal, Madeira, Portugal. That is named for him. It was widely reviled for looking less like a handsome footballer and more like a sloth from the Goonies. It was removed after a year. In 2009, okay, so this is even sooner, older. People are doing this. They didn't do it. Well, people didn't make ugly statues of people. This is just a new thing. And I think it's wrong and horrible, especially if the person's dead. Poor Lucille Ball. She had enough trouble. In 2009, she got a statue in her hometown of Celeron, New York. I thought she was born in Brooklyn, but what do I know? Okay. It was called Scary Lucy for its distorted facial features. Don't do this, which conjured nightmares rather than laughter. It was replaced by a statue with a more conventional Lucy-looking person. Great. The people who do these sculptures should have to pay for the new sculpture. Okay. But the passage, okay, so here it goes on and on. I forgot this part. But the passage of time often changes art's reputation. Now, this is true because Rodin immersed himself in everything Balzac before sculpting the author. Okay, so he read all that stuff he wrote. It was crazy. Ultimately, Rodin was more invested in capturing Balzac's creative power and vitality than faithfully recording the author's physical likeness. Okay. But the largely literal-minded art lovers of the time could not focus on anything except that the sculpture didn't precisely resemble Balzac. A plaster version of the statue unveiled in 1898 was met with scorn and ridicule. As a result of the mockery, Rodin withdrew the work, and it was not cast in bronze until 1939, 22 years after his death. Now, it stands on Boulevard Raspail in Paris, near the intersection with Boulevard Montparnasse. I wish I could speak French. Montparnasse, a much-loved city monument. It may not come in our lifetimes, but perhaps there is still time for the Don or Ronaldo or Lucy to be honored in similar places. I think that those other people are not Rodin. And his sculpture was actually beautiful because it was artistic and he was a genius. These others are laughably, not sophomoric, unsophisticated. The sculptors are without talent. I don't think Rodin could do something horrible even if he tried. So, I don't think that the Lucy one in Celadon, New York is going to come back anytime soon. I think it's not. Okay. Here's what's going on in Turkey. There is a rare bond between a stork and a fisherman. It's actually pretty cute. And they've been together for years. And every single year the stork comes back after he, you know, spends the winter in Miami Beach or wherever he is. And it's a big deal. In the news, in the papers, everybody wants to talk about this natural photographer and the pictures he takes. And there are interviews with the stork, who doesn't say much. And the fisherman now has a beautiful home. So that's what's interesting to people in Turkey. And I find it interesting because I don't think I would have gotten carried away over that. Okay. Now, Mr. Mom. Okay. Almost 1 in 5 American parents who do not work for pay are fathers. That is great. When my kids were little, there were two fathers. One said he was an architect and one said he was a screenwriter. I believed them. But what I really loved about these guys is if there was a play date after school and all the kids would come to a McDonald's or whatever, these men, together or individually, were playing with the kids in the playground while I was eating everyone's French fries and talking and sitting there the entire time. These fathers took the job seriously, laughing, throwing kids around, having the greatest time. I was like, wow. I know my father would have done the same thing. He would have thought it was a job. So I'm all for it. I'm all for it. I hope people do let, I hope more children have fathers that throw them around, because actually there's a study done for boys. In case you have any grandsons, you need to tell your son that there is a time in a boy's life between 2.5 and 8 where he needs to be roughhoused with. He needs to be thrown around. He needs to play with his father. He needs to be thrown in the water in the pool. Just tickled, attacked, you know, king of the bed, everything you can do. And if those boys don't get it, they long for it the whole life. Just like baby, you know, bears, you see it with the other animals. We are animals, but the girls like it. The boys need it. They need to be roughhoused with. And they really prefer it from a guy. Actually, that's the only thing that works. But it could be a grandfather. It could be an uncle. Just somebody throw that kid around. So that's what fathers are for. I love them. All right, here's one. I did not even know this. The peace sign. Okay. It doesn't stand a chance of lasting. Nobody cares. But it's been replaced by a smiley face. Okay, the divided circle design of the peace sign was created in the late 50s for the British nuclear disarmament campaign. That, I didn't even know. I thought somebody just made it up, like Peter Max. So, okay, here. This is crazy. All right, this girl, she had terrible boyfriends. Okay, she's going to Europe with her friends. Everything's not working out. She has this day where she meets this Italian guy, right? And she actually been pinched, and it can be very painful. A lot of Italians were making fun of her. She was a young girl. She'd just been out of like 4 bad relationships where guys lied to her and cheated on her. And this guy and his friend just met her, and he was working at the Vatican. And he said to the girl, be here at 3 o'clock and I'll take you for a private tour. She and her girlfriend went, and they had to go down this long hallway, and it could have been very scary, and it wasn't. And after that, they took them out to eat. They showed them amazing, secret, beautiful, nighttime glittery river views of the city. There was one little spot. Oh my gosh, this was enchanted. They took them to a keyhole. This huge door, and they look through the keyhole, and she stooped and gasped. Inside, illuminated and framed like a nesting doll, was the dome of St. Peter's Basilica. It was the size of a thimble and the most magical thing she'd ever seen in Europe. And then the boys took them back to their little hovel, the little hotel they were staying at, and they said goodbye. And they exchanged numbers, and they became pen pals. These boys never hurt them, never wanted anything more. One of the guys came to the girl's wedding with his girlfriend, and she said, "Why? Why were you so nice to me?" And he said, "Because you were so nice." But after that day that she saw St. Peter's Basilica through the keyhole, and then she looked over at him. She started trusting guys again. And on her flight back home, she was in a trusting mood. And she met this guy, and it became her husband. She wasn't looking for trouble. She was looking for something nice. And she said that before that, the first guy who hurt her, after that, she didn't trust anybody. She wasn't nice. And she was attracting untrustworthy people. But that guy and that keyhole and that basilica opened up her heart. She was fresh. She was new. And she met her boyfriend on the plane ride home. I think that's a really cute story. Okay, so here's a really sweet one about two 80-year-olds. Okay, and they got married. He's from Germany, and she's American. They look like twins. They were in a restaurant by themselves, both of them, in a French cafe. And she got wobbly while she was going to the restroom after she ate. And he said, "Would you like to sit down?" And she sat down, and she got herself together. She wasn't drinking or anything. And he kind of escorted her to the restroom, waited for her, and brought her back to his table. And he thought that a little cup of coffee and a little coffee cake would help her. And he got it for her, and it started their friendship. And on the way out, he said something about his wife to the waitress. He was paying for both of their bills. And he was actually a widow. He was trying to say to her, "My wife would have loved you." And all she heard was "my wife." So when he tried to get in touch with her to be friends, she wouldn't have any of it. And finally she said, "Why are you trying to talk to me if you have a wife? I don't like this." And he said, "My wife is dead. I wanted to tell you that my wife would have liked you." And I love that at 80, this woman, even though it was long distance, he's in Germany, she's in Brooklyn, she didn't want to even email a man who was married. At 80. I love her. So they got married, and they spent half of their time in Germany and half of their time in Park Slope. And she loves his friends, and he loves her friends. But the fact that she had a 53-year-old, he was married for 53 years to this woman, and they had no children. And so he would almost speak to his wife when his wife wasn't there. And he still does, and she doesn't care. He's a good guy. And she, to me, is an amazing woman. That she wouldn't even have an email with a man who was married. She's a class A. Class A act. Class. She deserves everything she's got. So I love that story. Okay, now I got two jokes for you because I'm thinking we got to make people laugh. We got to have a little more fun. Okay, so the first one is kind of silly. Okay, so this woman lives in her own home, okay? She's 92. She makes friends with this neighbor. He's a really sweet guy, and he's single. So she comes outside to him, and she goes, "Bill, would you just come over? I don't know what's wrong. I do crossword puzzles all the time." He goes, "Of course you do, and you're fantastic at them." She says, "I'm stumped. This is supposed to be a rooster. I can't get it to work. I need you to come and look at my puzzle. Please help me. Can you come tonight?" He goes, "I can come right now." He comes over. It's on the kitchen table. He looks at it. She goes, "It's supposed to be a rooster." He says, "Listen, why don't we just put the cornflakes back in the cornflakes box?" It's cute, right? I know. We're not there yet. We can laugh. Okay, so this one is for your husband, friend. This is a grandfather joke for a grandson, okay? It's a story of this grandfather's taking his grandson out on the golf course. He's been playing this course, you know, forever. Looks at the kid, gives him, you know, wants the kid to be good at golf, okay? So the kid's been trying, practicing, everything, summer vacation, he's back. "Granddad, let's play." They go out. Granddad's like, "Okay, let's play." They get to the third hole, and granddad says, "See that tree? When I was your age, I could get my ball to go over that tree." The kid's like, "Are you kidding me? It's huge." Grandfather says, "Yeah, I could do it." The kid's like, "Well, maybe I can do it. The tree's 30 feet tall." Grandson tries three times. He's like, "Granddad, you were amazing." Granddad looks at the grandson and he says, "When I was your age, that tree was 4 feet tall." It's cute, right? Okay, that's all I got. I mean, I hope AI is wrong. I hope this is a little bit better. I'm just doing one thing at a time. I'm going to do movie reviews just one at a time. I can't handle it. So, it's my first newsstand back in the biz. And I'm trying to stay sane. I'm trying to figure out who I am. I'm certainly not anybody that AI even wants to know, but I'm trying to stay sane. So I will be back, and thanks.
They fly so high, yeah.